Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to episode 216 of Heart and Soul for Women of Faith, where we talk boldly about faith, hope, purpose, prosperity, and how we're making a meaningful difference in the world as business owners, leaders, and entrepreneurs. We share our stories and strategies to encourage you in your journey and to help one another achieve success. One of my all-time favorite definitions of success is this one by the great Christian evangelist, Dr. Miles Monroe. Success is obedience to purpose. I'm Jory Fisher, a featured host on Blog Talk Radio with my guest, Mildred Muhammad, who will speak with us today, August 3rd, 2020, about how she moved from victim to survivor to warrior and champion. Hello, Mildred. Thank you for joining us on Heart and Soul for Women of Faith. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, Jordy, and thank you so much for this invitation to speak to your audience.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you. I mean, you absolutely are a person who defines the success as obedience to purpose. There's no question, ma'am. No question. So before I give our listeners a few instructions and invitations, could you tell us the primary message that you'll be sharing with us today?
The primary message is how faith played a part in how my children and I moved through a crisis. And sometimes it's difficult to look at faith in that manner, but that is what we do.
I know a lot of people will be wanting to hear that. And this is being recorded so that people can listen to this archive even 20, 30, 40 years from now when you and I are long gone. It's all very exciting. All right. Heart and Soul for Women of Faith airs on Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to any of my archived on-demand episodes at blogtalkradio.com/JoryFisher. And on my website, joryfisher.com, and that's spelled J-O-R-Y-F-I-S-H-E-R, joryfisher.com. Please follow my live interactive podcast by clicking on the little follow button on my Blog Talk Radio show page and creating a free Blog Talk Radio account. I also invite you to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to comment or ask us a question, please call 515-605-9750. That number again is 515-605-9750. You'll be placed in a call queue and we'll be able to listen to the show while you wait. A quick promo about who I am and what I do. I'm a former public interest attorney and law professor who's been coaching and training lawyers and entrepreneurs since 2004. I love helping vibrant women of faith build thriving businesses and lead joyful, purpose-guided lives. Please visit my website, joryfisher.com, to enjoy hundreds of free resources, including blog posts, videos, ebooks, and my Discover Your Purpose starter course. I also invite you to take a quick assessment to get a free customized report all about you. Knowing your bank code, as we call it, is the first step toward dramatically improving your relationships and, for our business owners out there, increasing your sales up to 300%. Go to crackmycode.com/report. That's crackmycode.com/report to rank your values, discover your bank code, and get your free personality profile. And now it is my pleasure to introduce Mildred Muhammad, who is an award-winning global keynote speaker and international expert speaker for the U.S. Department of State. As a certified consultant with the U.S. Department of Justice for the Office for Victims of Crime and a certified domestic violence advocate. She has repeatedly been called upon to be a CNN contributor. Her expertise positions her to make outstanding contributions regarding PTSD, that's post-traumatic stress disorder, suicide, and child custody. Ms. Muhammad is an impassioned 7-times author, trainer, and educator. As a domestic abuse survivor, she speaks on national and international platforms to discuss her life of terror, abuse, and heartache in order to promote domestic violence awareness and prevention. Her audiences include victims and survivors of domestic violence, law enforcement professionals, therapists, advocates, counselors, mental and medical health providers, university and college students, as well as military personnel. Mildred's authenticity is as remarkable as her unforgettable story of abuse. As the ex-wife of DC sniper John A. Muhammad, she shares what it's like to survive all forms of domestic abuse and violence, such as verbal, mental, economic, spiritual, stalking, and emotional, even without physical scars. Mildred's devotion includes the perils of PTSD that soldiers suffer when returning from a war zone, as well as domestic violence victims who are diagnosed with PTSD. She's been recognized throughout military communities for her championship of the Family Advocacy Program and their mission to educate, promote, and end domestic violence in military communities. Well, I don't know what your life was like before everything happened with John A. Muhammad, but afterwards, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. So, Mildred, I know people are going to want to know what launched you into the world of domestic violence advocacy and prevention. So would you like to tell your story?
Well, it started with my ex-husband, who was John Allen Muhammad, who was in the military. And when he was in Desert Storm, he was diagnosed with PTSD and he was not debriefed. So when he returned home, he wasn't the same person, as I'm sure you've heard many soldiers' families reporting the same thing.
Yeah.
And it was a different environment when he came home.
Mm. How long was he in Desert Storm?
He was actually there only for 3 months.
Okay.
3 months.
But that was enough to do it.
Mm-hmm. That was enough to do it. I don't know what he saw over there or what caused the drastic change that he had undergone, but once he got back, he was not the same person. And so from there, it began with the subtle things, breaking all of the plates except for one plate, one saucer, getting rid of all of the silverware except for one spoon, one fork, one knife, or two, I should say. If I expressed that I really liked a certain clothing or jacket, the next day would be gone. Some people would think that that's just not abuse, but it is. It's psychological abuse.
Totally.
But I would express how I would like to have something cleaned, and the next day I come home and it's a total chaos. So I learned to stop expressing how I felt or what I was like, because that way I was protecting myself. It just was not feasible for me to continue to do that.
Now, did you already had children?
We had one son. That was John Jr. And he took more interest in him, just because of it was he was in a war zone, and I believe that our son became his outlet in order to get more back into the routine of things. And so we had two more children after that. And once we returned from Germany back to the United States, moved from Fort Ord to Fort Lewis, and he got out of the military, then that's when stuff started to go differently. I'll put it that way. We had our own business, It was a mobile express car truck mechanic business, and he was more interested in helping female customers without fathers around to help them with their children. And so he became involved in multiple affairs, and that's when I said, okay, I just want a divorce, and then that's really when things went south.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And up to 75% of women who try to leave an abusive relationship are either hurt or killed, which is why many don't leave. There's not any places
yeah.
to go. Transitional housing is full, and now we're in a pandemic, which has really raised
wow.
the stakes on how victims of domestic violence are able to move about.
That's right. Oh, how horrific. So, Mildred, I don't know if you've ever heard this statistic, but years ago, when I actually represented women in domestic relations cases as an attorney, and I just remember at the time, the statistic was the average amount of times that a woman leaves the man before she leaves for good, or as you say, something worse, is 13 times. That she can, and by leave I don't mean actually pack up and go to a shelter. It can be maybe go to a friend's house for the night or something like that. But and the reason is because the person keeps wooing them back, you know, with flowers, with promises it'll never happen again or something like that. So. Should I call your ex-husband John? Is that what he went by?
Yes, ma'am. That's fine. And so that statistic has actually changed to 7 times now.
Is it 7 now?
But 15,
okay.
Yes, ma'am. It's 17. Sorry, 7 times now. Yes, ma'am.
Well, you know, maybe that's because there's a lot more publicity about it, and the work that you're doing is helping.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? That's great to know that the number is coming down. So that's great.
Mm-hmm. So did John try to woo you back?
Well, he tried, but my mother always said, never travel the same road twice. So
mm-hmm.
when you're in a relationship and you give it everything that you have, and that's what I did. And once I decided to leave, I wasn't going back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you feel comfortable sharing? I mean, you mentioned a couple of horrific. I say horrific because I can imagine what that's like to not be able to express your feelings about something, or it'll be gone the next day, or the opposite of what you want.
Right.
Do you feel comfortable sharing? Were there any other kinds of abuse that? And we have already the marital affairs, obviously that's abuse too, but was there anything else that you experienced with him?
Yes, ma'am. I had to be on a strict spending budget.
Mm.
So
okay.
if he gave me $100 to go buy groceries,
right.
if I was under 100, everything was okay. I spent $100
sure.
one
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll be writing. Stupid. Why do you think he's 100? You know, we only have a ton of money, but he could go and spend money freely.
I
was just the one under a strict
mm-hmm.
budget. So if I wanted to get my hair done, I had to have it approved by him. If I wanted to go shopping mm-hmm. for clothes, he had to come with me, or I couldn't do it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just got crazy.
It's stifling.
We had our own business. He would complain that I wasn't answering the phone because we worked together. And I was answering the phone.
Gosh.
I had to go get the parts. And he was supposed to get the parts because they had a mobile repair service. And I couldn't do anything right.
Yeah,
I couldn't do anything right. And that's what a lot of... women are under, victims are under. And so you just
mm-hmm.
get to the point of which I did. did of, you know what, this is just not, I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. I want a divorce. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, mm-hmm. I don't want a divorce. I said, well, you know, you acting free, you may as well be free. So I'm mm-hmm. trying to help you to do what you want to do without having to feel like mm-hmm. you need to lie or report back to me. And so once he left the house, then he began coming in the middle of the night because he had a key to the house.
Uh-oh.
I could hear the lock turning. I could hear him walking down the hallway. And I was lay there with my eyes open to a slither to just watch him walk around one part of the bed to the other, lean over to listen to me breathe and stand up and
creepy.
Then leave out. He did that three times, and on the third time, our daughter Taliba woke up and said, Daddy! He picked her up and says, here's Taliba, like he's supposed to be there. And then he leaves. Mm-hmm. So the next day, I call the locksmith.
Yes.
And to get the locks changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that when you have younger children, which I did, to not tell them all the information about what you're trying to do. And
sure.
So when he came over to visit our children, he asked my husband, he said, Daddy, Mommy's going to get the locks changed. He didn't know.
Yeah.
So then he said, so you're going to get the locks changed. I said, yeah, my key is not working. He said, well, let's go to the front door. We go to the front door. He said, see, my key is not working because he tried his key in the door. But didn't know that he sabotaged the lock by putting a straight pin in the lock. So when he took the lock off, stating that he was going to go get it fixed, the straight pin fell out, of which I did not.
What happened?
Didn't know that. But he didn't come. The straight pin fell out when he turned the lock.
Oh.
That's how I knew it was a pin in there. But he didn't come back right away. So that left the door unsecure for 3 days and nights.
Wow.
So I had to sit with a chair propped up against the door with a knife to protect my mom, myself, and my three children. And so eventually the locksmith came in order to change the lock on the door.
Right. Were you afraid that he was going to hurt you?
I was. Mm-hmm. I just didn't show it. And I just didn't feel it. Because if I showed it, then my children would notice and then they would be scared.
Yeah.
So I learned to keep my emotions to myself. So sometimes it appears that I really don't care when I actually do. But that's just, it's just the way it is.
Well, it's hard. You're really living two lives. You have the thing going on with the man who's abusing you, right? And then you have to keep up a brave front for the children. It's challenging, to say the least.
Right. And so when we when we didn't have enough food, because he gave me $50 after he left to buy food for the house for me, my children, three children, and my mom.
Yeah.
And I had to take it to a spiritual level and say that I'm fasting, because if you put in your mind what you want to do, the rest of your body will follow. So I said, I'm fasting.
Yes.
And so feeding my children, preparing meals, it was just enough for them and my mom. And I was just in peace. And so my son, he noticed. He said, Mommy, why are you not eating? I said, oh, because I'm fasting. He said, you're going to be the cleanest Muslim I ever seen.
Aww.
He said, why aren't you eating, Mom, really? I said, I'm fasting. He said, no, is it Dad? Is it Dad, Mom?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything because I did not then, nor do I now, speak badly to my children about their dad. And so I just took a spoonful of his food so that he could be okay. He said, thank you, Mom. I just want you to eat. And so it was, everything I did, I had to take it to a spiritual level. I studied Hagar. I studied Jacob. Because Jacob had Joseph missing. And I wanted to know how they handled situations spiritually and how they were able to call on God and get the answers. that they needed.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what I learned to do.
Well, that was very fitting with the famine that was going on at the time, right? So
right.
Study Jacob was perfect when they're sitting there starving. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
But also when he had the children for a weekend visitation, he didn't bring them back.
Oh, and yes. So, yes. So tell us about that. Tell us about that. I read about it. Mm-hmm.
So we had to get a restraining order because he told me, you have become my enemy. And as my enemy, I will kill you. And so the court awarded me a lifetime restraining order. However, we had to have visitation, and the visitation was unsupervised. So the first weekend went fine. Second weekend was my mom's birthday. He was supposed to have them back at 5:30 on that Sunday because my mother wanted to go to Country Buffet.
Okay.
5:30 Sunday comes, no children. We had a mediator that would pick up the children from me and take them to John and then bring them back.
Yeah.
And the mediator came back with a note and $2 that said, "Happy birthday, Grandma," which was from our baby girl, Saliba. I said, "Where are my children?" Mm-hmm. He said, "You have to call mm-hmm. John." So I'm blowing up his pager because we didn't have cell phones like mm-hmm. we do now. And at 7:30, he called and it was my son. And I said, "Ask your dad, what time are you coming home?" He said, "Mom, Dad say we'll be home in an hour." So that's 8:30. So at 8:30, no children. So now I'm blowing up his pager again, and at 11:35 p.m., he calls and says, "We're en route from Seattle. We'll be there shortly." As I'm hanging up the phone, I have butterflies in my stomach and thinking something's wrong, because if he's at Kmart, he's 5 minutes away. Why is he in Seattle, which is 45 minutes away?
Where were you at the time?
I was in Tacoma, Washington.
Live?
Washington State.
Okay.
In Tacoma, Washington. So 45 minutes one way is to Seattle.
All right.
But the next day, which was a Monday, they wasn't there. So I'm thinking maybe he's being nice and he's going to take the children to school for me. So I'll call the school. I called the school. They weren't there. And I called every day that week and they weren't there. And so Friday, I finally went over to the school. And that's when they told me that they had never been there and I needed to go home and call the police, of which I did. And the police came and they asked, "Did we have a parenting plan?" I said, "We were on our way to court for that." And they said, "I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do."
Oh, no.
And so they were gone. As I say, he said, he has just as much a right to the children as you do. I say, "But does he have a right to keep them from me?" And the police did not answer that question. And so for 18 months, I didn't know where my children were. People knew where they were.
How old were they, Mildred? How old were they at the time?
6, 7, and 9. 6, 7, and 9
wow.
years old.
Okay.
People knew where they were and didn't tell me. They would come over to check on me to see how I'm doing and then go and call John and report to them, to him, what I was doing. So I had to cut off all communication with everybody.
Right. Well, how did you get them back?
They were gone. Well,
I can't imagine. I would freak.
Well, I had the first thing I had to do, I had to go into a shelter because he called the landlord and told them he wasn't going to pay the rent. And he also emptied all the bank accounts, so I didn't have any money. My sister in Maryland had to come and get my mom. And I had to go into a shelter. And when I went into the shelter, that was after I had passed out because I didn't have enough. My cycle wouldn't go off. And I ended up in the hospital. And he called the hospital. Somebody told him I was in the hospital. And he called the hospital. And he said, "How's mom?" I said, "Mom's fine." I said, "Why won't you let the children call me?" He said, "We don't always get what we want, do we?"
Oh, my goodness.
And I had a choice at that moment because he already told me that you have become my enemy, and as my enemy, I will kill you. So I could either go back to him and die, or I could hang up the phone and never see my children again. I chose to hang up the phone. The nurses came because I let out a scream. I asked them, could they trace the call? They traced the call to a woman who called the hospital for John to find out what my status was. My mother called shortly thereafter and said that John just called her and said he was on his way to the hospital to kill her daughter. And that's when the social worker came. They posted a guard outside my door. They took my name off of the register. And the social worker came and said, we have to move you. We need for you to do three things. Number one, we need for you to change your clothes, and we're going to bring you some clothes. We need for you to change your name. Change it to a name that when people call you, you will recognize it. So my safe name is Millie. And third, you need to disconnect from everybody that you know because we have to put you in hiding. So that night, we went out the back door of the hospital, and a car was waiting. They drove all around the area because they didn't know where I was wanted. They didn't want me to know where I was going. Actually, the shelter was right across the street from the hospital. And when I got in the shelter, the staff person said I was in luck. I had my own room, which who wants to be in a shelter, right? So I get up in the room and I'm thinking, how did I get here? I'm a businesswoman raising three children. My mom lives with me, got a company, and I'm a shelter. I wake up the next morning and it's 18 women in the house. Nobody knows where I am. My children are gone.
I can't even. Yeah.
Nobody knows where I am. So for 18 months, I had to put my head to a pillow, not knowing where my children are. So I couldn't sleep and I couldn't eat because I felt like if they're not sleeping, I'm not going to sleep. If they're not eating, I'm not going to eat. So that was just how I was thinking. I didn't feel like I was a mother anymore because my children were gone.
Yeah, of course.
You know? And no matter what I did to try to find them, I couldn't go outside. I didn't go outside because I felt he would be perched up on a rooftop. Because John's motto was one shot, one kill to the head, never leave an enemy behind. And he was an expert shot, and I knew he wouldn't miss. There was an incident in the shelter. So I rarely tell this part of my story. We got an alarm that people had a fire alarm had gone off. Someone called and said there was a fire at the house, which it was not. And when the fire truck got there, they put a spotlight on the front door. And everybody had to leave out of that front door.
Oh, no.
And I told the staff person, I said, I can't go out that door.
She said,
why? I said, because there's no fire here. And I don't know. John was the one that called, and he's perched on top of the roof waiting for me to come out that front door, and he's going to kill me. I said, I can't go outside. She said, take this blanket, go back to your room, roll yourself under the bed like a burrito. That's how she said it. She said, the firemen are going to come upstairs, and they're just going to poke up under the bed to feel if something is there. Then they're going to poke hard, so don't make sound. And I ran upstairs and I rolled myself under the bed, and they did. They poked real hard and I did not make a sound.
Wow.
And everybody was out of the house. They said yes. And they left. And the staff said the next morning, they said, we don't know where that call came from.
But you did.
Fire alone. And that, I said, not going outside. He knows where I am.
You know, I have goosebumps. You have already talked about angels who have helped you several times in our conversation. I mean, would have been so, I mean, for a worker, you know, a shelter worker to go against the rules, when, you know, there's always the possibility there really was a fire, and then it would have been her fault. You were burnt up. I mean, you know what I mean.
But it wasn't a fire. There was no smoke. There was nothing. No fire. at all.
Exactly.
They don't even
know.
Because the call would have had to come from inside the house, or the alarm would have been set off. The alarm was not set off at all.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just saying that that was a risk for that lady to take. And
yes, ma'am.
She
absolutely did.
You know?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
She believed me. She believed me.
Yep.
That's what it boiled down to for me. She believed me.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there are people who are afraid of their partners, unfortunately. But yeah, you were terrified. Not many people
with fear.
A trained sniper.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. So what, you know what? And let me say this, in the very beginning, we did talk about the fact that, you're the ex-wife of the DC sniper, but there may be some people, particularly those who are younger, right? Mm-hmm. Who'd never heard of the DC sniper. So as you continue to tell your story, please feel free to, share that part too, because as I said, not everybody I know knows the DC sniper, but there may be some younger people who hadn't heard. Okay. So then what happened?
And so get through the shelter. My mom is sick in Maryland and my sister calls and asks, can I come here to help her? Which I ultimately did. But even when I got here, I didn't go outside. I mean, I got a job, but I went to work and I came home. I didn't make any friends because I was afraid that they would be hurt being my friend. So August the 30th, I get a call from the shelter stating that they found my children. And so I had to send all of my paperwork to them. Detective McCarthy in Bellingham, Washington, was the police officer that called and said, Ms. Muhammad, we found your children. You have to come back to Tacoma, Washington for an emergency custody hearing, which I did. It was the weekend of Labor Day in 2001. The judge, we went to court. The judge said, we're here today to decide who will get the children. John said, Your Honor, she already knew what these children were. He said, sir, according to her paperwork, which she did pro se, which meant I did it on my own, it is in perfect order, and she will get custody of the children. He said, Your Honor, you telling me I'll never be able to see my children again? He said, you have to go through the same process that she went through. She will get custody. Case dismissed. So we waited. My attorney, my advocate, and I waited until John left the courtroom. We go out into the hallway. My back is to the opening of the hallway and the courtroom door is to my left. So as my attorney who is standing in front of me is calling CPS to find out where my children are, I feel a presence behind me. I turn and it's John. And he's coming towards me and I take off down the hallway. My shoes go everywhere. My attorney, my advocate look at me. They looked at John, and they ran, too. We all ran around the corner. We looked back at John. He put his hand on the courtroom door, looked at me, and said, gotcha. My attorney said, oh, hell no. You got to get out of here tonight. So we waited until he left, and we went down the stairway to go to the police station that was inside the courthouse. And we asked them if we could go through their back door because of safety issues with John. And they told us, no, you got to go out the front door just like everybody. It didn't provide security or anything. So we walked out like in a triangle.
Oh, wait, the police station did not provide security. Hello?
No, ma'am. They did not. They did not. We walked out in a triangle, everybody covering each other's back until we got to the car. We went to the car. Drove over to social services. That's where my children were. We picked them up, went over to the YWCS. And that's when I called my mom and I told my mom I got them. And she said, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
And so we waited until it got dark. And we left out of the shelter down in the basement around the swimming pool through the clothing closet. There was a red door. We opened that door. There was a car waiting. We got in the car, drove 45 minutes one way to the airport. Security came and picked us up from the car, took us to their security office. When the pilot was ready to go, he radioed security. Security walked us to the plane. We got on the plane, landed at BWI, September 2001, and went into hiding.
Oh, praise the Lord. All right, so let me ask you this. How were your children handling this? I mean, they were now like, what, 8 and
They were 9, 8,
12,
9, and 11. 8, 9, and 11.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So were they, and they hadn't seen you for 18 months. So were they like acting relieved to get out from under him and back with you or what?
Well, they were just staring at me because they hadn't seen me. And so they said to me, Mom, Dad said that he was looking for you and he couldn't find you. I said, really? They said, yeah. I said, okay. So if your dad was trying to find me for you, why did he change your name so that I couldn't find you? Because he changed my son name to John Thomas, changed Selena to Teresa, and changed Saliba to Lisa. So I wouldn't have been able to find him. So I told them that they took back and just went for the ride. So while we were on the plane, my daughter Selena, I was holding her hand and she was crying and through her tears, she says, Mommy, I prayed and prayed and prayed for God to bring you back to us because I missed you so much. And I said, honey, I did not want you guys to leave me. I need you to understand that. And I will try everything in my power not to ever allow you to leave me again. And so once we got back to Maryland, we were living with my sister. And so that's when all of the issues with my children came out. So if I went to work, I told them I'd be home at 5. I come home about 5:15. They were frantic.
And they're upset.
And so I told them, I said, okay, I will be home between 5 and 5:30. And give them a bigger parameter.
I mean, there's traffic. Right. Well, that makes total sense. You know, can we backtrack 1 second? How did they get plucked from him in order to have that emergency hearing? Who found him? How did that happen?
He went to social services in Bellingham, Washington, and applied for food stamps and cash. And at that time, it's an automatic red flag for a man to come into social services requesting assistance.
Right.
They cross-referenced because he had to give them their real name. And I already had them in the system as being taken. So
thank
when
God.
They cross-referenced the name, they told him that he was approved, but he needed to come back the next day. And as soon as he left, that social worker called the police and said, we have a situation.
See? Another angel.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Woo-hoo. Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Boy, I keep getting goosebumps. All right. So so I'm going to take you back to where we were. And there you are living with your sister, right? And your children.
Right.
And you're going to work and coming home. And
with my children. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so, right.
So that's
so
where we are now. So then
ma'am. And so we are just living day to day, trying to make sure things happen. And then come September of 2002, the shooting starts. And then October, October the 4th, is several random shootings at one time. So the FBI profile was 2 Caucasians in a white box truck, which is what everybody was looking for. And I was looking for John, too. So everybody's looking for 2 people, and I'm looking for 3.
Oh, okay.
Telling us that we need to talk to our children, to find out how they're doing, their behavior and anxieties, and how to talk them through that. October 11th, my coworker picked me up for work, and she said, you know, there's a dark-colored car outside your cul-de-sac. I got a bad feeling from that car. I thought, well, right, girl, let's just go to work. So we pass by the car, and the driver looks at us, but the passenger has a newspaper and holds it up to cover his face. I said, did you see that? She said, yeah. I said, let me use your cell phone. Called the police, called 911, and said, there's a dark-colored Caprizo Impala with New Jersey plates seated outside of my home. And they said, okay, we'll send somebody out. October 23rd, ATF and FBI knock on my door, and they said, Ms. Muhammad, we need you to come down to the station to answer some questions. So I go down to the station, and that's when they say to me, we're going to name your ex-husband as the sniper.
Oh, my God.
And in that same breath, they said.
You had a suspicion that's who it was, right?
I did not.
I mean, you didn't know.
No, ma'am. I did not have any suspicion. No, ma'am.
Oh.
Nope. Didn't know.
Okay.
Didn't know it was John. Just two Caucasians in a white box truck. That's all they told us. And they said, we're going to name your ex-husband as the sniper. And I said, John? He said, yes. He said, do you think he would do something like this? I looked around in the at the ceiling. I said, yeah. They said, well, why would you think that? I said, well, he said while we were watching a movie that he could take a small city, terrorize it. They would think it would be a group of people and it would only be me. I asked him why would he do something like that, but he changed the subject.
Huh.
And then they said, well, Ms. Muhammad, didn't you know you were the target? I said, no, why would I think that? I said, well, there was a man that was shot down the street from you, shot 6 times. They took $3,000 and a laptop. There was another man that was shot a couple of miles from you in the abdomen. Ms. Muhammad, you were the target. Would you like to go into protective custody? I said, you got to ask me that?
Yeah.
He said, yes. Because some people don't want to go. I said, well, do you know where he is? He said, no, ma'am. I said, have you called him yet? No, ma'am. And you still have to ask me. Yes, ma'am. So I said, yes, I want to go.
How did they know that?
His
he was so close.
Friend, no, ma'am. His friend, Robert Holmes, he called the FBI in the midst of the shooting. And he said, I don't know anything about your case, but you may want to look at John Allen Muhammad. His ex-wife is in the area, and he may be there to hurt her. And that's when the investigation changed. And that's how they knew that I was the target. And that's when they put us in protective custody.
Wow. Okay.
Until they caught him, which was the next day.
Okay.
Deep breath.
I'm exhausted.
Yes,
Mildred.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
And here you were having to be a pillar of strength for your children, too, through all that.
Absolutely, I did. But, you know, I prayed, I fasted, I asked God to put people and resources in place to help me. I listened to my spirit. My spirit told me when to leave, when not to leave, what path to go on, where not to go. I asked God to put a word in the mouths of the people who he sent to help me so that I would know the difference, and he did.
Yeah. A safe word,
anybody
right?
can come to you and say, I'm with God, and then their behavior reflects something differently. But
that's
when they
right.
say a
that's
word true. That resonates with your spirit, that's when you know they came from God.
Yeah.
What was happening with me at that time. I knew the people that came to me and said, hey, let me help you with A, B, C, and D. That spirit connection was there, and I knew it was there.
Well, already, you know, if somebody's listening to this, and I'm sure they are, who is going through a challenging situation, already you've given several tips, if you will, in your story that would encourage them and give them some strategies. I don't want to not ask you this, and maybe this is the best time. Tell me about the what it was like for your children as well mm-hmm. as you can, because you can say he was your ex-husband. I mean, you'd already
Correct.
Divorced, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He will always be their father. You know,
Correct.
You know what I mean? And so
yes,
he was their dad. I can't
right.
imagine how awful that must be to have people know that your father is the one who, did
yeah.
everything. So,
Correct.
And how was it as a mom to help them through that?
Well, we had to start with the truth. The truth will make you free, but it didn't say it wouldn't hurt. I told them that the only way we're going to get through this is with the truth. I will tell you the truth about everything, even if it makes me look bad, because that's how we have to do this. My son hated, if I could use a different word that would explain his disgust with me, I would.
Yeah.
Hated is the best one that I could come up with, because his dad
sure.
turned him against me. And
yeah.
so...
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting on the sofa journaling, and he walked up and he said, "Mom, you want to know what Dad said about you?" I said, "Okay." He said, "Dad said you didn't want me. Dad said you loved the girls more than me.
No.
You could live the rest of your life without us, and that's why he took us." I said, "Okay, is there anything else your dad said?" He said, "Yeah, but I don't want to hurt you." I said, "But I'm a big girl. I can take it." And he said, "No, Mom." I said, "Okay, so this is what I will ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to compare what I do to what your dad said. If you find that I'm doing something that he said, I want you to talk to me so that you can understand why I do those things. And if I say something that I say, I want you to talk to me. Because unless you have comprehensive understanding as to why I do those things, then you will always remember the things that your dad said, and you won't ever give me a chance to prove to you that I am your mom and that I love you and I've always wanted you." I said, "I've always wanted you. I looked for all of you," and I showed them my 1-800 number. I showed them my website that I built, and I showed them the flyers that I distributed in that 18-month period trying to find them. And when they saw that, it was like a light went on in their eyes.
Good.
And that's when they said, "Dad lied to us." I said, "What did he lie about?" So Dad told us that we was on a vacation and that you were coming. That's why we didn't question what he said or what he did, because he told us you were coming. So that's how he was able to convince them or not have them to be concerned. And so my daughter, Selena, 9 years old, she was walking around, just cleaning up everything. I'm thinking, she's cleaning up good at nine years old. So I sat her down and I said, "Honey, I am so proud of how good of a housekeeper you are. You are absolutely amazing. At 9 years old, I tell you, girl, you are the greatest. I want to ask you to do something for me." She said, "Okay, Mommy." I said, "Okay. I want you to allow me to be the mother and you be the child. Can we do that?" She looked at me and started crying. She cried for a good 20 minutes.
Wow.
And when she stopped crying, she looked up at me and she said, "Are you going to do a good job?" I said, "I promise I will do my best." She said, "Okay, Mommy, but we're going to have a 6-month evaluation."
No.
"And in 6 months, I'll let you know how well or bad you're doing." I said, "Okay." She went and got her calendar, and she marked it 6 months later. She came at 6 months. I had forgotten about it. 6 months later, she tapped me on my shoulder. Yeah, nice. Tapped me on my shoulder, and she said, "Mommy, it's time for your 6 month evaluation." I said, okay, all right. I said, "We need to sit down." She said, "Yes, ma'am." I said, "Okay." So we sat down, and she said, "Mommy, according to what I observed, 9 years old, what I observed, you're doing a great job. And so I'm going to let you continue to be the mom.
Continue to be the mother.
And I'm going to be the child."
I love it. I love it. But
I'm going to go outside with my friend while you stay inside and be the mom. And she gave me a big hug and a kiss, and she ran outside to play. I'll never forget that. That was just so funny.
So Mildred, you know the personality test that you took, and you came out with blueprint first, right? And a blueprint loves order, loves structure, has plans, has systems. I think your daughter's a blueprint too.
It would be
a very blueprint thing to do.
I agree.
I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. So is there a feeling of shame or relief? I mean, I think, a lot of people listening to this may not know what ultimately happened to your ex-husband. So might want to go through that and then state how your children are feeling now, if you don't mind.
Well, once the news began to circulate that his ex-wife was in the area, right, and people found out it was me, then the community began to blame me for the crime.
Mm.
And so they said, if you would have stayed with him, then he just would have killed you.
Oh, my God. Gosh, you actually heard those words?
Yes, ma'am. If you would have stayed on the West Coast, then the people on the East Coast would still be alive.
Oh.
How dare you call you and your children victims when none of you were hurt or killed? And how dare you bring this drama into this quiet community? Victim blaming was at the highest degree for me. I was blamed for everything. Even John, the detective, said to me, "Ms. Muhammad, you know, we asked John, why did he do this? Do you know what his response was?" I said, "No, sir." He said his response was, "It's Mildred's fault." So he asked me, he said, "So what did you do?" I said, "I asked him for a divorce." He said, "That's all?" I said, "Yes, sir." So I was the one to blame for the innocent people that were killed, because the theory was he was killing innocent people to cover up my murder so that he could come in as the grieving father and get custody of our children and the $100,000 they were giving to victims of the sniper. So they probably would have named him Father of the Year.
Oh, my God!
Because he would have come in and got the children, you know, and nobody would have been the wiser. I was just another victim of the D.C. cycle.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So that's how that riddle went.
Okay.
So once the trial began, my children were having a difficult time. And so I decided, you know, let's go to the movies. And we went and saw Barbershop. Well, in Barbershop, Lee said, "You heard about the D.C. sniper, right?" I said, "Oh, snap, that's crazy. They didn't advertise that part would be in the movie." It's
that's
in the movie.
In the movie?
In the movie. Oh. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, no. What are the chances?
In the movie. I said, okay. And so I looked over at my children, and they were pouting and angry. I said, all right, okay. And so we get outside, and my son says, Mom, did you hear what she said? I said, I sure did, honey. He said, well, what are we going to do? I said, absolutely nothing. We're not going to do not one thing. I said, the one thing we have to understand is that everybody is entitled to their opinion. Doesn't mean you have to internalize it. Doesn't mean you have to accept it. Number two, the things that she said, was it true or not? And number three, we don't have the energy to go and debunk everything somebody has to say about your dad. That's his fight. That's his battle. What we have to do is we have to carve a path so that we can get through this trauma emotionally balanced. I say that's my job, to make sure that you are emotionally balanced children so that you can grow up to be emotionally balanced adults.
Amen.
That's my job. So we're not going to worry about that. We're just going to keep it moving. So they wanted to watch home movies with their dad in. Say, Mom, can we watch home movies? Really? Y'all really need to do
gosh.
That?
Yeah,
we want to. We want to know about that. Oh goodness gracious! Okay, so I pushed all my stuff aside. I did, and we watched movies and narrated what that was and what we were doing and why we were doing it, and they were laughing and all of that. And
okay.
So I did
Okay. God bless you. And how are they doing now? How are they doing
my
now?
My son is 30. He's
Has
doing
it been
great.
That
he's
long?
A manager. Yeah, right. 2002, he's a manager at Sunglass Hut. My daughters, Selena and Taliba, both majored in vocal performance and both sing classical music in 8 different languages. My son went to Louisiana Tech. Yeah, and so they're all doing great. They're emotionally balanced adults.
Thank God.
So you see them, you talk to them, you would not know what they went through. I tried to get them counseling. I really did. Unfortunately, I believe every unethical counselor in the area came to me. And so I went to the library. I got a book on counseling, and I learned how to counsel me and my children. I needed them to do well. And I felt that the only person that could really help them was me.
Woman, I knew you were amazing, but I am so glad to get the details. And I'm sure anybody listening to this show is thinking the same thing. So it became this horrific experience became a platform for you to help other people. So you helped your children, and now you're helping other people. You're a speaker. You're an advocate. You're everything. And
before
I became a speaker,
I asked my children for permission. I just didn't start to do it because I'm talking about their dad, and they told me that as long as I tell the truth, they're okay with it.
Okay.
And so I said, you know, we gotta eat. I had a job, but it wasn't financially stable. And then when people found out that it was me, it was really hard to find a job because nobody wanted to be around me because they thought they would be shot.
Even though he was already
incarcerated? Even though he was in prison. Yes, ma'am. Even though.
Okay.
Even though.
How'd you turn out so normal? Amazing.
Journaling, praying, fasting, dancing. I love to dance. I absolutely love to dance. And walking, power walking. You have to find your own outlet to your healing.
Yeah.
You have
to
know that every tear that falls from your eyes is one step closer to your healing. So I don't tell people not to cry. I say cry as much as you need to. You cry all day if you want to. Your body is going to know when you're tired of crying. And then after that point, that's when your another point of healing begins. The more you stifle your healing, the longer the process will take. The more you say, I shouldn't feel this type of way, the longer it's going to take you. Whatever you're feeling, feel it. Whatever it is.
Mm.
If you're in an abusive relationship and you leave and you find out that you still love him or her, feel that. Because once you get through that part, you'll say, yeah, but I won't love like that again. Or I won't do this again. Or I won't do that. It's just all of this is our lessons as to where, what you don't want. That's what they are. Lessons of what you don't want. And once you figure that out, then you can start to talk about what you do want and how you want to live your life. And the prayers that you should be putting out, you know? Because when I was in the shelter, we had an affirmation. Everybody had one affirmation that they needed to say. My affirmation was, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all of his righteousness, and everything shall be given unto you. They said, Mildred, is that the only one you've got? I say, that's the only one I need. That's the only one I need to say. The executive director of the shelter, she led a spirituality class. And one day, myself and four other women were sitting on the sofa, and we're just laughing and talking, you know, just having a good time. So she walks in, and she looks at me, and she says, Millie, that man not trying to kill you. You just in here because you don't want to pay your bills. If you if he was really trying to kill you and he took your children, you wouldn't be laughing like this. You'd be crying and trying to figure out what to do. I said, okay. I said, so in the spirituality class, you said that we are supposed to take our burdens to the Lord and leave them there, right? She said, right. I say, so if I take my burdens to the Lord and leave them there, then why shouldn't I be laughing? Why shouldn't I be happy? Knowing that God is taking care of the burdens I left with him. And she walked
Amen. Away. Amen. That's awesome.
You know, you gotta know that regardless of what is what you're looking at physically, that in the spiritual realm, God is taking care of it. And the reason why I studied Jacob was because Joseph was missing. Right? And the brothers knew where he was, just like people knew where my children were and didn't tell me. But Jacob never gave up hope. He always knew that one day he would see again. No matter what his son said, no matter how they tried to deceive him, he knew in his heart that he would see Joseph again. And in the Quran, Jacob says, his sons were saying, and I'm paraphrasing, Dad, why are you always, this is how I tell them, to talk scriptures to my children. Why are you always worried about Joseph? I mean, you know, you got all of us. I mean,
you got us.
I mean, what's the real deal? Why are you always complaining? And he said, I complain only to Allah. I complain only to God. And at that moment, I stopped telling people how I felt. And I only talked to God, and I told him my problems, and I told him what I wanted. I said, at the appointed time, I know with assurance that you will return my children to me, not one moment before and not one moment after. The day that John took my children, all I said was this, Lord, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing. Yeah. All I ask is that you return my children at the appointed time, because this is bigger than me, John, and our children. And I need you to take care of them wherever they may be. And I left it alone. That was my prayer. Because I believe that because I was that peaceful, that I didn't behave like a victim is supposed to. And so my help was slow in coming because I knew God was fighting my battle and was helping me along the way. So I could not cry and all of that, because then that would show that I was not being faithful, right?
So I
couldn't go into that victim mode. I never considered myself a victim, ever. Liked that word. You see? So if you don't feel that way, then you don't behave that way, right? So I needed God to know that I trust you, even when it doesn't look the way I want it to look. I trust you to do what you say you will do. You said you would return my children.
That's Abraham and Isaac.
There you go.
Right?
Right.
There are all kinds of biblical examples. You're right up there with the founding fathers.
I trusted him. I did. I trusted him. I knew. I did. And when I'm in trouble or I feel that I need help, I just say, Lord, because for me, that was the biggest trial I've ever been through in my life. So everything else is a piece of cake.
There you go.
So it's like, something happens, I said, well, Lord, I know you got this, because, you know, back when you did all this for me, so I know you're not going to let me down.
Sure. And I'm sure your children have that same spirit of resilience. I mean, that's really what you instill. Mm-hmm.
They do. Something comes up, they'll look at it and say, okay, well, Mom, you know, I said, it's going to be all right. You just got to trust and believe it's going to be all right. And at the appointed time, things will happen the way that they should. That's it. So stop worrying. My daughter used to always say when they was, Mom, I don't ever see you worry, and I don't know what to do. I say, honey, when you see me worry, we got a problem.
So
as long as you don't see me worried, we're good. We're good. That's what I told her.
Well, your mother must be so proud of you. Is your mom still alive?
No, ma'am. She passed in December of 2001. The shooting took place in 2002.
Yeah.
So I just say that the Lord took her so that she would not have to go through that.
Right.
I know she was out of her mind. But she was able to know that I got the children back. She was able to talk to them. She just didn't see them.
Good.
But she knew they were back with me. And my children were upset about that. And I said, you know, Grandma held on long enough to make sure that you all were safe with me. And once she knew that, she let go.
Okay.
So don't be angry with that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure our listeners have gotten so much out of this. Let's say that there's somebody listening right now who is fearful for her life or her children's life or whatever. And I know when you're out there speaking, you're speaking to audiences where there could be victims of abuse and domestic violence. What words, in addition to what you've already said, which has been so helpful, what would you say to these people who are listening?
I would say you are not imagining the abuse that you're in. Don't compare your abuse to mine. And don't compare your abuse to anybody, because then you start to diminish what is actually happening to you, and you decide that it's really not that serious. It is that serious. Domestic violence has gone from an epidemic to a pandemic, but we don't want to talk about it on that level. If you feel that you need help, call the national hotline, which is 800-799-SAFE, and SAFE is 7233. That's 1-800-799-7233. They will help you with resources in your area. If you want to go online and look for yourself, I would recommend that you go to domesticshelters.org, type in your city and state, and a list of resources will become available to you that you can look into yourself. Whatever you're doing on your computer and your abuser is there, remember to erase the history.
That's right.
I have a book titled Being Abused While Teleworking in COVID-19. You can purchase it on Amazon for $7.99. It's a download. And I purposely made it a download because if a book about domestic abuse and how you can get out of it is coming to your door,
yeah,
and your abuser gets the book, you'll never get it.
That's right.
But at least as a download, you can put it in a special file, a folder that they will mm-hmm. not have access to. Inside the book.
So say the
also,
name of that again.
It's Being Abused While Teleworking in COVID-19.
Okay.
It's on my website. Okay. If you go to MildredMuhammad.com, you can see it on
mm-hmm.
there, as well as other books and journals that can help you through this process. It's important that as you go through this, that you do a touch test. A touch test is when you, for example, I come to you, Jory, and I said, you know, John is not treating me well. He's talking to me abusively, and I'm really in fear for my life. Now, you're supposed to be me and John's friend, right? And so I'm coming mm-hmm. to you as that. And then you say, but John wouldn't do anything like that. I would never talk to you again because you just proved to me that you took John's side. That's how quick it
yep.
happened. And so what
wow.
you're going to do is you're going to go and confront John and say, yeah, you know, Mildred just called me and said, ABC and D have just put my life in danger.
Mm-hmm.
I have nowhere to go. We're in a pandemic. So he's going to get upset and he's going to confront me. And how am I going to get out of that? I can't.
Wow. So how do you know whom to trust?
That's the touch test. You have to, one of your friends, everybody has that one friend or two that will say, would you call them? Because this is what I do. My friends call me like they're in trouble. I listen to what they say. And then my next response is, what do you want me to do? That's my response.
Okay.
Even when my children
okay.
call me and they say, Mom, what you doing? I say, well, what do I need to do? Because you obviously calling me. Calling me to just cut through the chase.
There you go.
What do you need me to do? Right? So that's what I say to them. What do you want me to do? And then in that, they know, hey, I'm with you. I'm ready to do what you need me to do. If I am unable to do that, I am going to tell you I can't do that. So you got to have your boundaries in check when you have people that are calling you for help while they are in an abusive relationship. You need to figure out what you will do, what you won't do, and what you can't do. Will you give them money to go get a hotel room? Can they come and stay with you, right, in
mm-hmm.
a pandemic? No, right? And so once you figure mm-hmm. that out, then you'll know what you can do to help them moving forward. Victims want to know what you can and cannot do. I'm not going to be
yeah.
upset if you tell me you can't help me. You're just telling me that I'm not that resource you're looking for, but I can help
mm-hmm.
you to find that resource, but I'm not that. Be straight
okay.
with them, because that's how they'll know what they need to do to strategize to get from up under that type of relationship.
Okay.
But if you just have me tagging along and just don't want to tell me the truth, then I'm going to keep
yeah.
coming back to you. Just be straight
right.
with me. It's okay to be straight.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have a lot of resources on your website, and let's spell the name of, let's spell your full name so people can get that for the website.
It's M-I-L-D, as in Delta, R-E-D, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D .com.
Okay, great. Excellent.
And
well,
if
thank
you're also
you.
Looking for a personal life coach, I'm also a life coach, and that link to the website is there. And that website is myfocusllc.com. Myfocusllc.com.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Mildred, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being a guest on Heart and Soul. This has been fantastic. Is there anything else you wish to add? I don't want you to hang up and go, oh, I wish I'd said such and such a thing.
Well, we have to remember that in Ephesians 2, God said that he created us to be a masterpiece. He didn't say what point in our life. He didn't say what the circumstances would have to be. He said he created us to be a masterpiece. Don't allow anyone that makes you feel less than God, what God created you to be, to keep you from being the great person that you are. Even in your pain, even though you're in an abusive relationship, you are still that man or woman that you were before you met your abuser. You just got to feel that, get that courage up, and decide what it is that you want to do. Now, some people may say, well, Ms. Muhammad, I don't know if I'm in an abusive relationship because, you know, everybody argues. Everybody have their issues, which is true. So I'm going to ask you to do this. I'm going to ask you to get a sheet of paper, draw a line down the middle. One side is pros, the other side is cons. Brutally honest with both categories. So, and no excuses for either. So you could say, on the pros, he brought me some flowers. On the cons, you can't say he hit me because I didn't have a food cook. No, he hit me. You can't put emotions into actual facts because then you won't be able to logically look at what is actually happening to you. And that pros and cons list will give you a comprehensive knowledge of what it is and who you are dealing with in your relationship. And then pros outweigh the cons, you know that, okay, I can work on these cons with this person and make the relationship better. But if the cons outweigh the pros, you got a decision in it. Because now there it is right before you, the kind of relationship that you're in. And is that something you want to continue with, or is that something that you should walk away from?
Yeah.
Because remember,
and people
all of us
need help.
Everybody wasn't raised the same. Some people were brought up in an abusive home, and for some people, abuse means love. So if I'm not being hit, or if
because
I'm not being
threatened, because it feels familiar, yeah,
exactly. And so that to me, that's what love is. And so they may be the ones to be the aggressor, the ones to incite the violence, just so that they can feel the love that they need. But that's not something that anybody should strive. Type of relationship that anyone should strive to be in. If you're having those type of issues, then you should see a therapist or a counselor to help you to understand why you feel that way about love. Because love is not supposed to hurt.
That's right. Well, Mildred, God bless you, and thank you so much, and bless your children and your future grandchildren at some point and all of that. The whole line of Mildred's family, they just continue to be like you, actually, and be able to be world changers and change agents and everything. You guys are amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again, Mildred.
Absolutely. Just let me know when.
All right. Sounds great. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. I want to thank my friend David Nephew, who is the beautiful pianist that we're listening to right now, for sharing his beautiful music on this show. And again, go to MildredMuhammad.com for tons of resources about domestic violence and prevention. And go to JoryFisher.com for tons of resources that can help you as a leader and an entrepreneur. May the Lord bless us, keep us, and be gracious unto us, and may the Lord help us be obedient to our purpose and achieve divine success. Thank you so much, Mildred. God bless you.
Thank you. You too.